The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
A brief bio on my guest, Professor Wham, C.S. Matthews. She has an academic background in comparative religion, practiced Sufism, and she's also studied with North American indigenous practitioners. Her book, Mysterious Beauty, Living with the Paranormal in the Hudson Valley. We didn't get into that last time, and that's why I wanted to reconnect.
Bruce Palenbach is a guy that I know who lives in Kinderhook, New York. His whole family has had a series of bizarre experiences for at least two or three generations in this one location. And they are a variety. They run the gamut from, you know, cryptid, Bigfoot kind of experiences to UFO experiences to ghost experiences to poltergeist experiences.
Mysterious Beauty, Living with the Paranormal in the Hudson Valley. Professor Wham, C.S. Matthews, is my guest. What's been going on in your neck of the woods? Anything new?
The last that I've heard is, I think, I talked to my friend Gail Beatty. She founded the Bigfoot Research Society here in the Hudson Valley. Bigfoot Researchers of the Hudson Valley, that's what it's called.
Okay.
And she was telling me about a woman who's been having some kind of odd experiences in Highland, which is not too far from where I live. It's maybe about 8-10 miles from where I live. And this woman has gotten all kinds of really interesting kind of footage, photographs, and video, like from her phone, which is not the greatest video in the world, of just weird sounds and like strange footprints and stuff. So I just got that information not long ago, so I haven't had a chance to really follow up on it. So there's that. And then the gym that I go to, which has fully reopened and which I have started going back to, I've talked to the owner there, and I talk about this in my book. I asked him when I first went back, I said, so have you had any new things that you've caught on film? And he did. He had these two CCTV videos, one of which is, I think personally, is one of the best videos I have ever seen of something weird. He's got a copy of it. I've seen it. It hasn't obviously been published, but it's like, you look at it and you're like, now that's either something for real or it's faked. And I know he didn't fake it, because he doesn't even know how. it's an incredibly interesting, and it's like a shadow figure, and this is in broad daylight. It's like a shadow figure that suddenly appears in the doorway, enough upstairs by the yoga room, enough so that it triggers the CCTV camera.
Yeah.
And this is in broad daylight, and it's a shadow figure, and you can see through it. But you see a very clear shadow of a person, and it looks just like a person, except it looks kind of like a cloud, like a transparent cloud.
Uh-huh.
And it's looking around the door. It's like it leans out and looks around the door, and you can actually see portions of the door through it. You know, like where it's leaning. It's very bizarre. He said he saw that. He said he decided he was never going to clean the place by himself again. I was like, why? You've seen these things before. You've had all kinds of orbs flying around in your gym, and you're scared of that. It is creepy, though.
Wow.
Does
he have plans to publish it or put it on YouTube or anything?
I talk about it in the book. I talk a little bit about some of the stuff in the book, and I duplicate one of the photos that he took in the book. But, you know, this is his business, and he doesn't want to lose his business.
Oh, darn
it.
He
doesn't want people to, you know, he doesn't want to say where the location is, because he doesn't want people to flock to it.
You right.
know, he doesn't want people to mess with it. And he's actually lost a couple of customers who have had experiences there,
mm-hmm.
who it freaks them out, and so they've left. And so he doesn't want to, like, stir that up. So I doubt that he'll ever be too public with it. when I told the story about him in the book, I keep the location secret and I don't mention his name. That's one of the problems with something like this. If you mention the location, you're going to get inundated by every crazy person that decides that they need to come and see for themselves, you know, and, you know, it's better, you know, from my perspective, a lot of times, and I think from his, it's better sometimes to just try to figure out how to live with it and document it as well as you can, you know, for your own sake and you know, just to prove that something's going on. But anyway, so those are the two latest things that I know about. I know that there have been some UFO sightings around, but I haven't been able to keep track of them yet. So that's something I'm hoping to do in the next few months. Kind of key into that again.
And all of a sudden it's getting major headlines and some real official attention and maybe a game plan on trying to do more scientific research. This is the closest we've been in decades.
You know, those of us who have been studying this stuff for a long time, we're like, you know, oh yeah, right. The government says, oh yeah, you know, there's stuff out there, but we don't know what it is, but we don't know if it's from outer space. And like, well, I don't know if it's from outer space either, but we also all know, those of us who have been doing this for decades, we also all know, which has been confirmed, that the government has been, in fact, interested in studying this for as long as it's been around to study it. So, you know, it's like, whatever. I'm not impressed with whatever it is the government is saying at this point with it. You know, my whole thing is I'm just interested in, you know, keeping track of it for the purposes of talking about, you know, what it says about the deeper aspects of life and the kinds of meaning that people make out of these experiences for themselves in their lives. I mean, that's what I'm way past the whole notion of whether it needs to be proved or not.
Yeah.
I mean, there's enough. I mean, all you need are, like, you know, one or two major incidences, and we've got tens of thousands of them. So it's like, just stop with the denial already.
Yeah.
You know, it's just crazy.
It's nice to be able to say, hey, I experienced this just between you and me. I know what's going on, and I don't care what anybody else says because I know what I saw. And that's what happened with the Phoenix Lights when people said, yeah, you can debunk it any which way from Sunday, but I know what I saw, and we don't have anything that fills the sky half a mile wide. Okay?
Right. That's kind of the way I feel about, you know, the stuff that has happened, you know, here in the Hudson Valley where I live. And I mean, I've had some of my own experiences, and I mean, I wouldn't say that my experiences for the most part are very dramatic, you know, compared to some people's, but they were not experiences that I could easily explain. And when I actually explained them to people, they were like, oh, that is kind of odd, you know? Some of the best stories, the most convincing stories are like that. They're not complicated. There are stories where you think something is going on, and then all of a sudden it's revealed that it's not that, but you don't know what it is, and it's not easily explainable as to what it is, you know, when you actually sit down and think about it. There are things like that that happen to people every single day, and, you know, a lot of the people that I know in the Hudson Valley, if they've had it happen to them maybe once, you know, something like they see a bizarre UFO or you know, they have a ghost experience or something. If they see it happen just once, mostly because they live here and this place is sort of known for having weird things happen, they either write it off or they just sort of put it into the back of their mind as, well, I live in the Hudson Valley and this stuff happens. I've actually talked to people who said that. It's like, well, you know, I had this thing happen and I don't know what it was and it was the only thing that ever happened, but I live here and this happened. So, you know what I mean? They just sort of accept it as part of their background in their life. If they have had repetitive experiences, like some other people I know, then they might build a greater sort of sense of meaning about what all those, how those things might all be connected. You know, like say Bruce Hallenbach, who's a guy that I know who lives in Kinderhook, New York, and he has had, his whole family has had a series of bizarre experiences for at least two or three generations in this one location. And they are a variety. They run the gamut from, you know, cryptid, Bigfoot kind of experiences. storyteller, you know, he could tell, and these are like family stories, you know, but they're bolstered by, you know, his sister will give her side of it and his cousin will give their side of it. You know, so it's not like it's just him, you know, that obviously influences how a family will see themselves, you know, within a community. That's kind of the way it is here.
The book that we're referring to, Mysterious Beauty, Living with the Paranormal in the Hudson Valley, Dr. C.S. Matthews, the website, ProfessorWham.com. I want to hear more about these stories, your stories, and the stories you've collected. So we're going to take a quick break. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. I'm talking to Dr. C.S. Matthews, author of Mysterious Beauty, Living with the Paranormal in the Hudson Valley, and Professor Wham. As everybody knows you, we went into the background on why that is. That's because your friends don't want to say the fun, cool Sufi name that you have, and so Wham is what they ended up with, right?
Right. Yeah.
Kirkus Book Reviews, this is like a feather in your cap, all right? An encyclopedic and immensely entertaining history of the Hudson Valley's long otherworldly tradition. All right, that's really a nice piece of, you know, propaganda. This is a perk for them to say that that's a positive review, at least the way I'm...
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. It was a much better review than I anticipated. It was actually really good. I was really happy with it.
Okay. So, all right. When you moved there, you knew about the history of the area, or did this something that did by personal experience, all of a sudden you started putting the dots together and saying, whoa, this is worth investigating?
Well, I knew somewhat of the history of the area. I mean, anybody who has worked in the paranormal field, which I have done research in for, you know, numerous decades, knows about the 1980s series of UFO flaps that occurred, and from like about 1983 to about 1987, I think, is when it peaked. And that's well known. I mean, there's a book that's been written about it that, you know, Hynek contributed to called Night Siege, which is about that particular flap. And then if you know anything about Whitley Strieber, or Strieber, however you pronounce his name, in his book Communion, which of course is his detailing of his experiences with the visitors, that happens in the Hudson Valley. In fact, the area where it's supposed to have occurred is about maybe 35 miles from where I live, due west. So I was familiar with that. And then there's also a ghost tradition that is part of the Hudson Valley that has been inherited by the rest of our culture through the writings of Washington Irving. You know, the legend of Sleepy Hollow, Rip Van Winkle, and a series of other stories that he wrote, those are all prominently featured, they prominently feature Hudson Valley, either geography or, you know, towns, various locations. So, you know, that Kinderhook that I just mentioned earlier, Kinderhook is a place that Washington Irving went to when he would travel on a sloop up the Hudson. When in his, like, Rip Van Winkle or The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, both of those stories use elements of Kinderhook as it existed at the time when he came up, and also another town which is called Sleepy Hollow, which is now further south in part of the suburbs of New York City, in a town that's called Tarrytown. So he used elements of both of those locations as they existed at the time and create, you know, kind of made a composite, and that's where you get sort of the images of the town that is depicted in Legend of Sleepy Hollows and in Rip Van Winkle. So I knew of that kind of stuff coming here. What I didn't know was the way in which the stories and narratives and the deep psychic or psyche sense of this kind of these kinds of stories, how they're just sort of part of the culture here, and how then as a result of that, people when they have experiences, they have a kind of reference that they can go back to, you know, that there is this area that is known for this. What I didn't know also is that there are cryptid sightings, fairly prolific cryptid sightings, like Bigfoot, as well as a number of other types of cryptids that are occasionally seen, and that the UFO sightings continue. They're not talked about very much. They're not at the same level that they were in the 1980s, but people routinely in different parts of the valley over the course of a year will see triangle things or, you know, triangle crafts or whatever they are, or this very interesting kind of, they're like balls of light in formation, except that you think that they were drones, except that they are too low and they're doing things that drones could not do. And that the indigenous people here refer to them as spirit lights or spirit ships. And some of them come down off, are still seen coming down off the mountaintop of Overlook, which is the mountain that is behind, kind of provides the backdrop behind Woodstock, you know, the famous town Woodstock.
Yeah.
And so these orange lights are seen routinely by people who live there, orange and yellow lights. And I asked an indigenous person who lives here, you know, well, what are those? And he was like, oh, those are the spirit ships. They come down from these holy sites that are on the mountain, which are actually on the mountain. There are places that archaeologists have located several places on Overlook where there are indigenous petroforms and other ceremonial sites. They were clearly ceremonial sites, cairn sites they're called. So this stuff is just part of the landscape. People see it all the time. They see it so often that they don't report it.
Yeah.
And you have to just actually talk to them, and they go, oh, yeah, there's that. You know, I didn't know about the Bigfoot stuff, though, at all. I didn't know that Bigfoot was a feature of an ongoing feature of this area that goes back to the 17th century. Despite this, you know, I mean, it would go through cycles so that, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, it goes through cycles. Because the Hudson Valley, even though it's heavily forested now, what people don't know is that since contact and settlement, it's been clear cut and has grown back twice in 400 years.
Wow.
This area was completely deforested twice, and then it grew back. So obviously the area wants to be forest, you know.
Yeah.
And connected to that grow back, you have these cycles of Bigfoot-like creatures being seen. It's clearly connected in some way to the forest environment. There are all kinds of stories with the river itself. Anybody who stays in the Hudson Valley for any period of time, and you don't even have to be terribly psychic or magical for this, but anybody that stays in the Hudson Valley for any period of time comes to understand that the river is a person. It's a personality. It exudes a personality, and it has moods, and it does. It's an amazing living being, even though we try really, really hard to kill it and pollute it. I don't know if you're familiar with the movie Spirited Away. It's a Japanese anime, and if you haven't seen it, I recommend that you see it. It's extraordinary, but there's this one whole sequence in it where a river spirit is coming to there. It's about a little girl who gets caught in the spirit world, and she gets set up to do the job of cleaning the spiritual essences of ghosts that come to this Japanese ghost bathhouse. and at one point, this really kind of noxious creature comes in, and she has to clean it out, and it's her job, and they're trying to like make her do it because they don't like her very much. She ends up being successful in cleaning this ugly, noxious spirit out, and it turns out that it's the spirit of a river.
Oh, cool.
And she has cleansed it, and that's very much like what the Hudson is. It's like we have tried to kill it and destroy it, and we even historically classified it as a canal to deny that it was a river, and that so back in the 60s, it wouldn't qualify for a cleanup. That's what Pete Seeger's whole thing about the Hudson was.
Wow.
You know, he found that out. And so there's been a lot of work to clean it up. But she has just prevailed. She wants to be alive.
Yeah.
And if you're here for any period of time, you figure that out.
I'll have to look that movie up.
So there's something about this place. So those are the things that I discovered coming here. Those are kind of the underlying things of the book. You know, it's not just about ghosts and about UFOs and about Bigfoot. It's about those things, but it's also about the spiritual power of a place.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a movie, Muscle Shoals, and they talk about the singing river there, and I can't remember which river it is. It's a Native American belief, and when they were relocated to Oklahoma, the rivers in Oklahoma didn't sing. That's just a quick reference to that movie, but I remember that and thinking how powerful that is when you're by a body of water and it has, you know, it's a spiritual influence and you sense it, you feel it, and it really colors the entire environment, that atmosphere for the people who live there. Time displacement, I read in the overview, you have something about that in this book.
Oh, time displacement, yes.
Okay, hold on, yes. Hold on. No, stop. Okay, we're going to take a break because I want you to get into that, and you're not going to have enough of time here. So, okay, time displacement, along with the other paranormal stuff, this is one of the things I find most fascinating. ProfessorWham.com, that's the website. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House.
I see it clearly enough for a few seconds that it's very obviously not a bear because bears can't walk upright like that. It was striding like bipedally.
Dr. C.S. Matthews, covering all sorts of paranormal and other unusual, curious, unexplained stuff. The thing that caught my eye on your book, you have, you know, the aliens and the Bigfoot, UFO, stuff like that, but it was time displacement.
Okay, well, this is something that a number of people have talked about. There are several interviews in part two where people are just, the people that I'm talking to, most of them are experienced, they're all experiencers. But a lot of them are also researchers, okay? So they come at this from both sides. But many of them have experienced what I call time displacements. And they're called, you know, they're often called missing time. That's what some people refer to it as. Where, you know, you have somebody will see a UFO or they'll have an experience with something and then time seems to freeze where they lose an hour or two or they lose some time. There have also been a couple of instances that people have talked about with me. I talk about it briefly in the book, where people have had experiences with beings that, for want of a better word, we would call little people. I have to knock on wood here because I'm not supposed to talk about little people in the summer, according to my indigenous friends.
Oh, wow.
In the house. Whenever I talk about them, I have to go do a tobacco offering afterwards. But anyway,
okay.
I've had several people talk about, they will have an experience where they're out in the woods or they're like driving down the road and they will see these, what appear to them at first they will think are small people, like small adults. And then they'll realize that they're not adults or people or humans. Really. I mean, they sort of look like people, but they're too small. Bruce talks about this experience. It's one of the weirdest experiences that he remembers. He was living in his grandmother's house at the time, which was the focus of a lot of this paranormal activity. And he'd gone out in the backyard and he looked down down a hill where a far field met with a wooded area. And right at the edge of that, he saw this guy that appeared to be dressed in sort of dark coveralls, if I remember correctly, and seemed to be digging a hole in the dirt. And he didn't recognize this guy, and he didn't know that there was any work to be done. So he went in and got his grandma and said, "Is there some guy out there that is doing some work on the field?" And his grandma was like, "No." So they went out to look, and they saw him digging. And he looked like he was maybe a little shorter than a normal man, you know, an average man. And they called to him. And they were like maybe, I don't know, 100 yards from him or something. And they called to him, and he wouldn't respond. And then finally, at the way Bruce describes it, he stopped, and he stood up, and he turned around and looked at them, and he had no face.
Huh.
He had no face. Bruce said that he and his grandmother, were so shocked that they like almost went into like a fugue state, and he says I don't know how long we stood there. It was kind of like we were in this state of absolute shock because the guy just turned around and started digging again. So he said it was like we were like in a trance, and we just stood there for a while, and then all of a sudden we just kind of shook ourselves out of it and went back in the house. Like didn't go out. Stop the guy or anything.
Well, okay.
Went back in the house. There was just this, so they went back out of the house, and about an hour later, they went out and the guy was gone. And so they went to that where he had been, and there was no sign of any digging or anything having occurred.
Wow.
We don't know what that was. they lost some time in there, and they were never able to figure out exactly what happened. Yeah. But it was like both of them, when he turned and faced them and didn't have a face, they were just like,
you know? Okay,
so
yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah. It's stuff like that, you know. And like I said, there are other instances, of many instances, of like the classic kind of missing time. My friend who I recount who had this spiritual experience, or whatever you call it, illumination experience, after he had fallen and had a terrible freak accident in which he was horribly injured in ways that are almost difficult to even talk about because of how terrible they were. And he somehow managed to get himself out of the ditch, even though he had, I don't know, it was sort of like 22 fractures, like in his spine and head, and he was bleeding profusely from a head wound and all this stuff. And he had this extraordinary experience, and to this day he doesn't know exactly how he got to his neighbor's house. I mean, he remembers somehow getting there, but he doesn't know how he got there exactly.
Because
mm-hmm. it was like a quarter of a mile away, and he had to walk the whole distance, and it was really cold, and he was bleeding all over the place. His wounds were horrific. But it came after this encounter that he had with like a being in a white light with his two dead sons. He had lost two sons earlier in his life, and they appeared to him and somehow did something so that he got there. But his life has also had some really interesting things that have happened in that after that, you know. And then when I talked to him and did the interview, as I talk about in the book, it turned out that when he was younger and was out with friends, that they had a really interesting UFO experience in which they both lost time.
Mm.
That's what I mean by time displacements. You know, it's and sometimes in some of the displacements, time seems to speed up. You know, like they will seem to gain time rather than lose time, and they can't explain that. You know, Bruce has talked to me about that.
Uh-huh.
Like that. So it's almost like time slips or something.
Yeah.
You know.
That's what makes these things so curious, is that this isn't a linear kind of equation. This is something that challenges us to figure out, how do the dots connect?
Well, and some of the dots are in another world.
Yeah.
So they're in another place. So it's like, of course, they're not going to connect here. Or if you try to connect them here, you're going to get a distorted picture.
Well, we have to accept that sometimes we're not going to get the answers, period. You know, it just, that's it, unless we figure out how to think and approach things differently. Like the people, they froze the minute they saw that the guy had no face. It was like, okay, there's nowhere to go with this. And they didn't even go investigate
right,
at the time.
Exactly. It was completely shocking. You know, like one of the experiences that I had personally, like when I mean, it's a very simple experience. It's not an uncommon one in this field. It's, you're driving down the road and something that looks like Bigfoot, I guess, you know, what we call whatever that is, just walks across the road in front of you.
Mm.
That happened to me. And I didn't even know that there were Bigfoot that were seen here. I didn't have any, when I moved up here, didn't have any particular interest in Bigfoot. I didn't really care one way or the other. I did ghosts and UFOs, you know, I didn't really care. I was driving home and it was at night, and I was watching the road really carefully because we have terrible deer running out and from car problems here.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't drive here for any length of time without eventually hitting a deer, or at least a little bit, or almost hitting a deer. I mean, everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was watching really carefully for that. So I was watching the road. I was not inattentive. I was, you know what I mean? But I was expecting other beasts, you know? And then I turn a corner and my headlights hit this 9-foot tall thing.
Wow.
Walking across the road. And it puts up its hand to shield its eyes, you know, so it's like, it's, I see it clearly enough for a few seconds that it's very obviously not a bear, because bears can't walk upright like that.
Yeah.
The way it was striding like bipedally, you know, bears can walk for short distances upright, but they don't walk bipedally.
Well, it's like, welcome to the neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. And I slammed on the brakes in the middle of the road and just sat there going, oh my God, what did I see? You know, and, and, And then I got on Google and looked around, and by golly, and they were actually having sightings of those like types of things in that area at that time. So it wasn't that unusual. And that's how I got in touch with Gail Beatty, the Bigfoot researcher, since I looked her up. That was sort of my shock.
Yeah, and I heard this on another interview, one of the interviews on YouTube. We were mentioning the Underground Railroad and in that area, the paranormal stuff that goes along with that. So if we could, in the next break, just touch on that. Mysterious Beauty,
sure.
Name of the book, Living with the Paranormal in the Hudson Valley, and my guest, Dr. C.S. Matthews. Professor Wham, back in a few. Wendy's Coffee House.
What I talk about in the book with regard to the Underground Railroad, where I interview a guy who's a ghost hunter, one of the things that he has specialized in is using reports of hauntings to help him locate areas where the Underground Railroad ran up through the Hudson Valley. Because we know it did. It came up, and there was a place where people got off at Newburgh, and then another place where people got up at Poughkeepsie before they were channeled up through Albany into Montreal into Canada. I mean, we know that anyway from other sources. So what he has done is he has located several places in Poughkeepsie and in Newburgh where you have buildings, theaters. The Chase Theater is one place, and then other locations like people's houses, which were obviously stopping places, but he's been able to identify them initially because he's gone and investigated hauntings that are associated with those places. And then when he goes into the history of it, he finds out that these were actually places where slaves were hidden. And, we like to think of New York as, one of the northern states, but in fact, slavery persisted in New York State for a long time. And segregation was particularly bad here, even until the 20th century. So even though, slaves weren't purchased anymore, there were still people that owned slaves. Probably the most famous of those individuals was Sojourner Truth. Her name was Isabella, and in fact, she was born not too far from where I live, and her master's name is one of the names of one of the crossroads that I live nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, so
right
slavery
there.
Was alive and well in New York State. But this is what he's done. And in the book I mentioned it would be a really interesting kind of project if historians would be willing to do it, to try to use ghost reports in certain areas and try to map those on top of known places where the Underground Railroad worked, or where we know that it, boats landed, or that people were hidden or stuff, because he's already done some of that. So it's interesting when you see evidence of that kind of mapping, where you know that certain things happened in certain places, and there are clear there's that the evidence is first seen in the reports that people give. There is a tradition that I'm aware of but am not in touch with. I mention it, and the only reason I mention it is because I don't have the contacts here to be able to really explore it. But I know that there is a tradition of African-American haunts here, in the sense that in some of the old African-American communities around here, that they have their own traditions of things that are haunted and spirits and things like that. And I'm just not in touch with it because I'm not in touch with the communities. I've just had that pointed out to me by some individuals in the Black community or in the Hispanic community that are also members of some of these paranormal groups, because, the same kind of racial tensions exist in those groups. A lot of times those groups are started by white people, and they're not necessarily interested or embarrassed maybe about some other traditions about, hauntings or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And so that stuff gets shunted aside. Part of what I do in the book is to sort of just talk about some of those things and how there's probably even more out there. I know that there is even more out there in terms of different traditions, different ways of understanding what a haunting is, different ways of living with those kinds of experiences and explaining them. And so the book introduction to a lot of this stuff. It's not like complete, you know. So part of what I'm doing in the book is, please, other people, I need your help to do all this other stuff. You know, this is just sort of an introduction. You
know? Basically, a cry for help. Yeah.
Right. When this is something that could interest all of us. I know we were going to talk about my dissertation a little bit. That's one of the things that I do in my dissertation as well, as I just, at the end of it, it's like, this is just an introduction to this stuff. It's like, other people need to take up this work and do it, you know. No one person can do this work.
Some of the interviews I've seen with you on the internet, you talk about the dissertation you did that examined the difference between the basically the white framework, how it was presented as this is the way UFOs and this is how it works for everybody. But it was just a white perspective, whereas African-American
right.
is a unique and different perspective, and it needs to be included too. But you acknowledged it. For the dissertation, for people who I thank you for sending me the PDF, as in huge, huge body of work.
800 pages or something. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You could update it, or someone could, because you have a lot of work there that really identifies how it is different and how some of the things were whitewashed when it came to Barney's experience versus Betty Hill's experience. And we really need the whole context to understand exactly how everybody sees these things differently. And that isn't a bad thing. That's human nature.
Right. Well, and I can say two things really briefly. One is that the dissertation now is about 20 years old. So it would be in need of major updating. Yeah. And there are some changes that have happened at various levels among certain paranormal groups. There's beginning to be, at least in the new and upcoming younger generation of paranormal investigators that I am so grateful to have been put in contact with, that are really kind of aware that this is an issue. And so they, you know, I have in the last, I mean, like I said, I wrote this like 20 years ago. In the last 5 years, I have gotten more requests for my dissertation than I've ever gotten previous to that. So, and it's mostly these younger investigators that are wanting to kind of see what the parameters of the literature has been in the past. Like I said, there have been some changes. I would have to do so much updating in the dissertation that it would almost be a completely different work. So I'm not willing to do it myself. I just don't have the time. But I'm perfectly willing to provide people with, like, you know, the framework for the arguments and the sources that I used and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. It almost seems like the time is right.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And reading some of this stuff.
I was just 20 years before my time.
And that's fantastic. You opened a door, and there's plenty of people now who can go through it with even more information. I'm like, wow, this is so cool that this exists for people to contact you. Your website, ProfessorWham.com, and you are also co-host on the podcast Church of Mabus.
Church of Mabus Radio with Jeffrey Pritchett.
Where you talk about all sorts of cool, unusual, paranormal, weird, spooky things.
Yes, all kinds of stuff, and some of the best Bigfoot stories ever.
There.
I mean, seriously, I don't know where he finds some of his Bigfoot people.
Okay.
Some of the best stories ever.
Okay, that's excellent. All right, well, I appreciate your time, and I want to stay in touch because this stuff never gets old.
The universe is wondrous and strange.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you. And if you're interested in hearing more of this interview, just go ahead and go back on to Wendy's Coffee House at Audio Boom. And the earlier show that we did is there. I think March 13th of 2021 is where I bookmarked it. But thank you. Thank you for giving the time to talk about this. And I wish we had more, but we'll just have to reconnect again.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll always talk about this stuff.
I know, because stuff happens every day. And good luck with the Bigfoot guy, the one that's out there, you know, waiting for you to drive by again.
Okay, thanks. I could do without being surprised like that very often.
So. Wendy's Coffee House, thanks for listening.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer.
Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.